Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. Dan Rosen here, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, how you doing, man? You ready? You raring to go?
I'm always ready, Dan. Whenever I hear your voice, I get into the zone and I'm ready to podcast.
Did you feel that yesterday when you called me? Because I don't think you felt that yesterday when you actually called me for something different.
No, because we weren't podcasting and you didn't have your radio voice behind your mic. This is what gets me into podcast mode.
This is my radio voice. Come on. I don't have a radio voice. At least the Montreal Canadiens came through with some big news for us to talk about today, right? We're recording this Thursday morning. It is about 24 hours after the Canadiens made the announcement that they fired Claude Julien, their coach and associate coach Kirk Muller. Replace them with Dominic Ducharme, who's going to be the interim head coach for the rest of the season, at least. He'll be reevaluated at that point. And they brought in Alex Burrows to be an assistant on the bench and run the power play. What's your initial reaction? When you first saw it, what was your initial reaction?
Shock, right? Look, Montreal is Montreal, and crazy things happen there. And the pot is always at a boil, right? Because people are so passionate about it, and everybody is so knowledgeable about hockey. But Claude Julien went from being a genius and beating the Penguins and having the best team in hockey for the first 3 weeks of the season to being a coach who can't coach this team anymore and in theory had lost the team. I mean, that was the argument that they made when it was over, that they, you know, that Marc Bergevin saw things that he didn't like, you know, and the Canadiens suffered through two 8-game losing streaks last year, and they couldn't do that this year because of the shortened schedule and everything else. I mean, yeah, they lost twice to the Ottawa Senators, once in a shootout and once in overtime. And, you know, that's what defines whether you can have a job or not. So it was shocking. It was a little bit of, I don't want to say pity, but just, I guess, sadness, because I think Claude's a good coach, and he's been unceremoniously fired on numerous occasions when you didn't think he deserved to be fired. So I guess that's where my thought process was.
Well, certainly from the New Jersey Devils, right?
And the Boston Bruins.
And the Boston Bruins, but the Devils, man, 3 games remaining in the season. Anyway, you say shocked. I'll be honest with you, Sean, and we're going to bring on Dave Stubbs, our columnist for NHL.com, based in Montreal, as plugged in to the Canadians as just about anybody. And also we'll have Kwame Mason on from the Soul on Ice podcast a little bit later too. But before we get to Dave, let's talk a little bit more about this. You say shocked. I wasn't that shocked, to be honest with you. And maybe it's just because of some of the reports I was seeing coming out of Montreal, people questioning if Claude's job is on the line at this point. You hadn't heard anything from Marc Bergevin, no vote of confidence or anything like that from Jeff Molson either. And Bergevin at the beginning of the season set the expectations for this team, saying that playoffs just wasn't enough. It had to be more. They had to do more than just get in this year, and based off the moves that they made in the offseason. And then I think Claude Julien was a product, you know, the downfall of Claude Julien was a product of the Canadiens' great start, because it raised expectations so high for them in just what, 10 games when they were 7-1-2, and people are looking at it. And I remember seeing stories of like, they can do no wrong, you know, and that was, you know, obviously they could do wrong, but they were great. They were 7-1-2, everything was rolling, and then everything stopped, and 2-4-2 in their last 8 games, a power play that's 5.9%, a PK that's 71.4% in those games. And it was like, what happened? The thing's going off the rails here. We have high expectations. Let's change it up. We can't deal with this anymore. And that's kind of, I think there was a product of their high expectations going in and then their hot start.
One of those people, by the way, let's just get it on record. One of those people was you.
I still believe in the team, though. That's the thing. I think if Claude was the coach or not, I think this is still the best team in that division. I really do. Top to bottom, I think they're the best team in that division. You look at the goaltending, the defense, and the depth they have up front. They may not have the talent that the Edmonton Oilers have. They may not have the talent that the Toronto Maple Leafs have. Heck, they may not have the talent that the Vancouver Canucks have. But they have a snarly big defense. They should have terrific goaltending. We'll get to that in a second. I think their center depth is solid, but it's not producing right now. Only 8 goals from the 4 centermen that they have. They've got good play on the wings. They're big. They're fast. Honestly, I think if you line them up against any team in that division and say, throw a 7-game series out there, they win a 7-game series against any team in that division.
Wow. That's pretty bold. I mean, we're 18 games into a 56 game season. Like, aren't we at the point now where teams are who they are? And, you know, you talked about the goaltending. Like, that's a fallacy at this point. I love Carey Price as much as the next guy. I've advocated for Carey Price over and over that he's not done. But the numbers are the numbers, right? Yeah. He's a sub 900 goaltender right now. Jake Allen is the better goaltender in that tandem right now. And I'm not saying that Carey Price can't find his way out of this. You know, you look around, especially the North, like there's a lot of guys like Frederick Anderson's hovering right around nine. Like he's at 903, I think. He's been below nine for a long time. You know, the Vancouver goalies have had a huge problem. You know, there's no joy being a goaltender in the North. Let's just put it that way. Even Connor Hellebuyck, who's the Vezina Trophy winner, has had his troubles. And that's going to happen when you think about the shooting gallery that is the North Division. But Carey Price has not been good. And you could argue that that's the reason that Claude doesn't have a job today.
Well, it's a coach killer. We've seen it all the time. If your goaltending is subpar, it kills the coach. It's just the way it is. And you're 100% right on Carey Price. And it's a whole other argument when you're spending nearly $15 million on your goaltender that you need to bring in a $4.35 million goaltender to help your $10.5 million goaltender is a little insane, if you ask me. But the pair, the tandem itself should be better. I did see a graph floating around that the team plays better, doesn't give up as much in front of the net in that home plate area when Allen is in net versus when Price is in net. I don't know how much stock I'll put into that right now. I'd have to see a larger sample of it and whatnot, but the goaltending needs to be better. Carey Price is an 893 goaltender right now. And that's obviously not good enough, but how many times, and the reason I say that about the Canadians is about, you know, how much I believe in them still, is how many times do we see a team go through an 8 or 10 game struggle in a season, come out of it and still be a good playoff team? It happens a lot. It's just that this is a 56 game season, not an 82 game season. And so everything gets magnified when you go on a stretch of 8 games where you're not playing well, especially when you're not beating a team that you should beat in the Ottawa Senators. Whether, you know, I agree with Mark Bergevin when he basically didn't answer a question he was asked and instead just said, look, don't talk to me about the Ottawa Senators. They're an NHL team. They play hard. They got good young players and they're well coached. Agree with all that, but the Canadians should be beating them. All that being said, would you be surprised if the Montreal Canadiens all of a sudden start getting better goaltending and go on a stretch where they win 7 out of 10?
I wouldn't be surprised, but let me just backtrack for a minute and address something else that was said in that press conference. Here comes the rant is coming back. Mark Bergevin said in that press conference that his team needed a new voice. And GMs always say, our team needed a new voice. Our voice was getting stale. You know, it wasn't resonating with the team anymore. And I understand that you can't fire 20 players. But if Claude Julien's voice is getting stale, is there not a problem with your team? If Claude Julien, who has won a lot in his career and, you know, engineered the team that beat Pittsburgh in the playoffs and everything else and was the coach of that 10-game start that everybody was ready to name him coach of the year, if his team is tuning him out, isn't that a reflection of the team? And yeah, shouldn't the team have to pay a price? And now, you know, Ducharme comes in and they go on a run and, you know, oh, what a smart move by Mark Bergevin. Well, he constructed the team that tuned out the coach. Like, where's the accountability there? That wasn't a great rant because I never really raised my voice, but it just the constant, the team needed a new voice. Like, it's corporate speak, right? Like, that's what you expect at a corporate job when a guy loses his job. Like, oh, the guys in the cubicles weren't listening to the voice anymore, and we need to go in a new direction. Like, these are grown men who are professional hockey players. A, they shouldn't need a voice. They should just go out and do their jobs and do them well. But B, it's almost like a reward, right? Like, oh, we don't want to listen to this guy anymore, so we play a little bad and he'll lose his job and we'll move on with our lives.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they did it on purpose, but
I'm not saying they did it on purpose, but how do you, Like, how is that ever an excuse that his voice became stale?
Well, the way, what I found interesting with Mark Bergevin said, and we'll move on after this point, because we are going to talk more Montreal with Dave Stubbs in a little while. What I found interesting from what Bergevin said is when he said that he knew the message that Claude was delivering to the Canadians, but the team wasn't delivering that message on the ice. The team wasn't coming through with what he was saying. And when he realized that was happening on a repetitive basis, that's when he realized the change needed to be made. Whether you agree or disagree with the new voice or whatever, if the team is not doing what the coach is asking them to do, the team is tuning out the coach. And I agree. Where's the accountability, Sean? But like you said at the very start of your mini rant, your toned down rant, you can't fire 20 guys. It's the age old thing in sports. That's why the coach gets canned. You know, this isn't to say that Claude Julien's not a good coach. I mean, I think he's a terrific coach, and I think he would be a smart hire for any team that wants to make a coaching change, or any new team coming into the National Hockey League, by the way, Seattle. I think that would be a smart hire, but clearly it wasn't working, or Mark Bergevin felt it wasn't working. So they bring in Dominic Ducharme, who's younger. He's 47 years old. I loved how he said he's taken the side roads, not the highway, to this job. You know, he's taken an interesting, you know, a different path. I didn't realize, by the way, he played at the University of Vermont with Marty St. Louis and Tim Thomas. That was a little fact I didn't know about. So we'll see how it goes. But we'll talk more about that with Dave Stubbs in a little bit. How about the Los Angeles Kings, though, Sean? How about those Kings? Huh? 6 wins in a row, and they haven't trailed in any one of those games. Are they for real?
They're getting there. They weren't in my Super 16 this week, and I feel shame about that.
I had them in.
I do feel shame about that. You know, I probably should have gave them a little more stock at the bottom half. I tend to wait a couple of weeks to make sure that a team that goes on a hot streak or a cold streak, like Montreal just did,
I didn't have Montreal in, by the way.
Yeah,
knocked them out.
What, the team that's going to win the North? You didn't have them in your among the
just
Super
for a week
16?
Or two, man. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah, okay, buddy. But I watched the game last night against St. Louis, and that's the other thing. Like, they're doing it against some pretty good teams. It's not like they're beating up on Anaheim, you know, who's at the bottom of that division, or teams like that. Like, they're playing some pretty good teams, and they're playing them well. And I thought last night was just a clinic and who they need to be and who they are. You know, there's been a couple of renaissances, right? Like, Kopitar's been really good. Dustin Brown's been really good. Drew Doughty.
Phenomenal.
Nothing better than pissed off Drew Doughty.
Yeah.
And
phenomenal.
I will have to ask Bob Bender, but I'm hoping we can say pissed on the podcast.
We can get Drew Doughty on the podcast to say pissed off.
Yeah, but when he's mad, when he thinks he's been disrespected, oh boy, right? Yeah. And he's playing really well. He's playing a ton of minutes. And you know, Mikey Anderson was his partner until he missed the last game. You know, I would throw him in the rookie of the year conversation. You know, he doesn't have the numbers some of those other guys have, but he's playing big minutes. And I think he's helped Drew out, right, in the way that he plays and just some youthful energy. And they have some other young kids on their team. You know, when we talked earlier in the year, it was the top three, and then who was going to be the four? Was it going to be Minnesota or Arizona? I think you can put LA in that conversation now.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. You know, when watching that game last night, like you said, you saw what the Kings have to be to win. They work, man. They work. They don't stop. They're big and they're fast and they're relentless. And that's kind of the staple of what you expect a Todd McClellan team to be: big, fast, and kind of relentless. Look, you're going to get Kopitar's been great. I like the mix with Brown and Iafallo. You're going to get production there. Carter, Adrian Kempe, and Gabe Vilardi have been solid as a second line, but that Trevor Moore, Blake Lizotte, and Carl Grundstrom line doesn't stop working. You know, AA, Andreas Athanasiou, and Wagner and Amadio, they're fast, like just so fast all over the ice. The Blues couldn't keep up. The Blues are ravaged with some injuries. Okay, we get that. I understand that they are. And I mean, if we're going to talk about this West division, I think the Blues are going to be just fine as long as they get healthy, but they're ravaged with some injuries. But I really liked what I saw from LA. I like what I've seen from them in this 6-game streak, because they're scoring first. They're getting the lead. They're keeping it. They have not trailed. Their power play and PK have been excellent. To me, they're growing up faster, I think, than they probably even thought they would.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that concerns me with that team and any team that kind of lives on work ethic is, you know, what happens when the games start to pile up.
Yeah.
Can they maintain what they're doing right now over a 50 game stretch? And then also, you know, if they make the playoffs, into the playoffs, like when you think about the playoffs this year, you know, Rick Bowness in Dallas talked about it the other day. He's like, I've never seen anything like this. Like what we're going to be asked to do in the next 2 months is crazy. And then the reward for doing it is you get to go to the playoffs and you get to do it some more. And, you know, what shape are some of these teams going to be in? What condition are some of these teams going to be in when they get there? So, you know, that's the one thing that concerns me. The other thing that interested me last night watching that game, and I had a little epiphany as I was watching it, was Calvin Peterson was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's been really good all year, right? Like he's playing to a .931 save percentage and a 2.28 goals against average. And he's been better than Jonathan Quick.
Yes.
Right. And the changing of the guard is happening
slowly,
you know, as we watch it. Like I'm not going to say Jonathan Quick's all washed up. But he's 35 years old and he hasn't been as good this year as his partner. And you watch and you could see, you know, Jonathan was happy. They're winning and everything else is going on. But you wonder as that's going on, as the incumbent goalie, as you see the young kid keep on playing well, like Jonathan Quick was there at one point. He was the young kid who every time they put him in played well and he became the number one. And now it's happening. You know, we talked about Montreal and that's not the case with Carey Price and Jake Allen, right? Jake Allen's he's an older guy. You know, he's a stopgap measure, but this is a young future coming in and he's playing lights out. And, you know, it's probably going to motivate Jonathan going forward. Not that he needs any motivation. He is one of the most self-motivated people I've ever met. Him and Drew Doughty are like the two grumpy old men who like, please tell me I'm no good. And then I'm going to go shove it in your face. But it did strike me as I was watching that, like here comes a changing of the guard and, you know, as exciting as that is, it's also going to be, I think that's going to be one of the biggest challenges that Todd's going to face down the stretch is how he platoons his goalies.
You know what? To stick in that West division before we get to Dave Stubbs, there's also, what about the Wild too? So you bring up the goaltender. It led me to think about the Minnesota Wild. They are on a 4-game winning streak and in net for all 4 games was Kaapo Kähkönen, not Cam Talbot, right? And Kähkönen's been terrific in those 4 games, 6 goals against on 109 shots, a 1.51 goals against, the .945 save percentage. He's played more than Cam Talbot this season. Is there Cam Talbot came in and he signed a 3-year contract, but is Kähkönen now the number one goalie in Minnesota?
That's a great question. And I look, they had high hopes for him. And, you know, he's part of that Finnish invasion, the new wave that's coming with Saros and Korpisalo and Lankinen and all those guys. So, you know, I wouldn't bet against him. He was really good in Iowa last year. And I thought he played really well last night. But the thing with Minnesota is they beat a really good Colorado team last night, beat them relatively easily, didn't get a point from their first line, and still won by 4 goals, right? What an entertaining team that is. And Kaprasov, he's ridiculous.
He's so good. What they need. He's exactly what they haven't had.
Yeah, the one play he made to Hartman where he, you know, on the broadcast, the guy's like, oh, that was kind of a blind hoper. And then when he watched it again on replay, he's like, please don't tell Kirill I said that, because there was no hope in that. Like, he did it.
Yeah,
like,
he knows what he's doing. That's
every time he takes the ice, you hold your breath and you're just like, I wonder what this kid's going to do this time. Like, his skate work and his vision are otherworldly.
Matt Zuccarello has been terrific for them, too. So, I mean, look, it's really interesting. That West division is going to be fascinating to see how it goes. I, like I said, I still believe in the Blues. I still think the top three are the top three. No question about it. The Blues need to get healthy, but could it be the Kings now overtaking, you know, that fourth spot or not? But anyway, Sean, let's move ahead and let's bring in Dave Stubbs. He's our columnist with NHL.com. He's obviously up in Montreal, lives there, and knows the market as well or better than anybody. Dave, thanks for joining. How are you?
Good to see you, Dan and Sean. Happy to be with you.
Happy to have you. All right. So you got, we already gave our reactions to the decision that Mark Bergevin made to fire Claude Julien and Kirk Muller and bring in Dominic Ducharme as the interim head coach and bring in Alex Burrows as the assistant. You're in Montreal. Okay. So what's the reaction up there? What was the tone that you felt yesterday?
Well, I very carefully opened the blinds at 6:41 this morning, and the sun did indeed rise in Montreal, which actually was a pleasant surprise because we've been living nuclear winter up here for the last couple of weeks with this hockey team, right? It's 13 months of the year, 25 hours a day. I think that people sort of understood that this was likely going to be coming. I suggested that that Claude had already been fitted for the greased skids out of town. And it's you know what? It's a business and you understand that. And Claude Julien is one of the great hockey men, and he's a real fine gentleman, and I have nothing but time for him. He's a wonderful guy, but I think that, you know, the situation in this short season is that I think everyone knew, given how Marc Bergevin had built this team in the off season, that the leash was going to be short. A team cannot afford to go on losing streaks as the Canadiens did last season. They had two losing streaks of 8 games. The first one undid a great start, and the second one pretty much buried them. And it was only through the grace of God, a good wind, and COVID that the Canadiens, of course, qualified for the postseason. So everyone knew, I think, going into this season that they had to come out of the gates well. And they did. I mean, they came out really well. They were 7-2-1 in their first 10, but they've gone 2-4-2 in their last 8. And you can't do that this season, especially in the divisional play the way it is, and hope to be there when the bell rings for the playoffs.
You know, you wrote about it in your column. Dan talked about it a little bit in the open here, and you know, everybody's suggesting that Claude Julien is a victim of expectations, that the expectations were so high for this team, and you know, therefore he had to be let go because those expectations haven't been met. Are those fair expectations? I mean, I look at this team and it's changed, but I don't know how different it is from the team that finished in 12th place.
Sean, I think the excitement built obviously through the off season, this hockey team performed better than a lot of people thought they were going to. When the Canadiens were announced as one of the playoff teams last year, Claude Julien said, look, we're not going to apologize for being here. Yes, we were on the outside looking in. Well, it is not through our doing or through circumstances that we are going to be playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So they went in there, and I think they were certainly underdogs, and they knocked off the Pittsburgh Penguins 3-1 in the qualifier. They pushed the Flyers to 6 games. Carey Price played out of his mind. He showed the way he can play when he is rested. He came in after that long layoff, the pause due to the concerns of our famous coronavirus. But he came in, he played great. He was 1.78, 936 with 2 shutouts in 10 games. And it was a bit of a coming out party for 2 young centermen. You had Nick Suzuki scoring 4 goals with 3 assists, and Jesperi Kotkaniemi had 4 goals. And what happened through all of this, I think, Sean and Dan, is that some unrestricted free agents, some people who were going to be setting a bit of the table for themselves in the offseason, took note. They saw what was going on in Montreal. And in the past, it wouldn't have mattered who the general manager was. They go banging on doors of free agents, and the guys would say, sorry, but Montreal doesn't interest me. Well, suddenly, a group of guys were interested in coming to Montreal. So Bergevin courted and he signed Tyler Toffoli. He got Corey Perry, Michael Frolik, who has yet to play a game here, defenseman Joel Edmondson, backup Jake Allen. He got Josh Anderson in a trade with Columbus for Max Domi. Extended Brendan Gallagher and Jeff Petrie on the blue line. He's got a young stud in Alexander Romanov on the blue line, who they have high hopes for. So I think the expectations were reasonably high. And again, it becomes relative. It's based on what the expectations have been in Montreal in the past. And suddenly what Claude Julien was given to start this season, he had a very, very good team. And certainly I would almost suggest the best team on paper that the Montreal Canadiens have had since their last Stanley Cup in 93.
Can they get back, Dave, do you think, to being the team that they were in the first 10 games of the season? When I was reading things like they could do no wrong, you know, like they were unbelievable. Like, can they get back to resemble that team under Dominic Ducharme here? Or are they more of the team we've seen in the last 8 games, where not very innovative offensively, power play struggles, PK struggles, goaltending struggles?
Yeah, it's going to be, it's not going to be, you don't turn this ship around overnight. I mean, Dominique Ducharme certainly has his work cut out for him. One of the things that was a little telling was before the game Tuesday night, I guess it was Monday of this past week, Shea Weber spoke to there being negative energy around this team. And when you hear that coming from a guy as seasoned and as much of a leader and a looming presence as Shea Weber is, he certainly has the pulse of the dressing room. And any media guy, it's a different time. Obviously, we're not in the rooms anymore. But any media guy who would say, I have the pulse of the room. No, we don't. I mean, it's the guys who are in that room who know what's going on. And Weber, if he's speaking about negative energy, then I think that's an issue the Canadians have to deal with. So Marc Bergevin spoque to Dominique Ducharme being sort of a new model of coach. He said he's a great communicator. Claude Julien, when push came to shove, was leaning more on some of his veteran guys. And there's some young blood here that wants to play. There have been some curious things. You look at the fact that Montreal Canadiens, their four centermen have 8 goals combined. You cannot do that. You're not going to do that in today's NHL. Suzuki has 4, Kotkaniemi and Jake Evans have 2 each. And the number one centerman, Philip Danault, who's been playing between Toffoli and Gallagher, has 0 goals in 18 games. And Danault has been feeling a little out of sorts. Word leaked out up here that he had turned down a 6-year, $30 million contract. Marc Bergevin famously never speaks to any contract negotiations in public. He's not going to do that. Danault has pretty much just closed his mouth on that too, but he seems a little bit out of sorts. You have a great dressing room leader and a popular guy and a fellow like Tomas Tatar, who's the leading scorer last year. He was a healthy scratch last Saturday against Toronto. Paul Byron, who's an alternate captain, was scratched for a game, put on waivers. He cleared waivers. He's, you know, taxi squad. He's in and out. So there are a lot of issues that have to be dealt with here. But I think that Marc Bergevin felt that given the brevity of this season and the fact that, you know, he doesn't have the wiggle room, we put it to him directly yesterday saying, if this is a conventional season, would you have given Claude Julien more time to work this team out of this slump? And he sort of said, well, it's a hypothetical if. And I think at one point he said, if that guy doesn't beat me, then I win the race. So, yeah. You know, we'll see what Dominique Ducharme can do. He's a guy who has certainly paid his dues. But again, here comes a guy into the city of Montreal who has 0 games coaching in the National Hockey League. And he has to take this steamship and turn it around. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see. But the Canadians certainly have been just sort of out of tune of late. They've been out of sync, and they're not the team that they were certainly the first 10 games of the year.
You know, it amazes me. We talk about sample sizes and how unfair they are and everything else. You know, the one issue I've had with the Canadians, and we talked about this in the open on how high Dan is. Dan still thinks they're the best team in the division.
I do.
And teams win, and teams win in the playoffs when they're good down the middle.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you just talked about it. Like, Kotkaniemi spent time in the AHL last year. He mm-hmm. was completely lost. He was sent down. He was in the minors when the season ended. And only by, again, the pause and everything else that happened was he ready to play in the playoffs. You know, Suzuki had the smallest of sample sizes. And all of a sudden, we walk into this new season, and these are the two great centers. They're young kids with no NHL experience. They're getting their heads caved in by guys that know how to play hockey. Like, yeah. how do you say you're one of the best teams in the league when you're trying out a defensive centerman as your number one center, and then 3 kids who were in the minors last year?
Yeah.
All in where's the leadership there? Where who's teaching them how to play, and how do you win with nobody up the middle?
In a perfect world, right, Philip Danault is not your number one centerman. He certainly has a great role on this hockey team, but, you know, by default almost, he's there. And there's been some discussion that Kotkaniemi maybe is the guy who at some point it moves up and becomes the number two or the number one centerman. Nick Suzuki has been really good too, but you look at these guys, they're still young guys, they're still growing into their bodies. And let's face it, I mean, you look around the league and you look at some of the heavy teams out there, these guys are going to get crushed. I'm still stunned that Brendan Gallagher can stand. I mean, some nights he just gets absolutely just... He may as well just give the guy a blue jersey to begin with, because he's lying in the blue paint half the night anyway. So, you know, you look at you're right, Sean. I think that you do need strength down the middle. And that famously was the very first biography that was written about Jean Béliveau in 1970 was called Strength Down Center. And that is what the hockey team needs. They need a guy who's going to be a commanding presence and is going to be there. And with the four centermen they have, they're all kind of good role players, but there's no one guy there who is going to be sort of your take command centerman. And that's something that the Canadians have been lacking pretty much forever.
Yeah, no, they've been lacking it for a long time. By the way, Dave, you got to be careful about Brendan Gallagher in the blue paint these days in Montreal, because is it goalie interference? Is it not goalie interference?
Right? You spin a goalie around, it's not going to end well.
No, it's not. You know, I wanted to ask you, what do we know about Dominic Ducharme? Like, what do we really know about him? He's been an assistant there for a couple of years, and prior to that, he was in the Q for a long time. He won the Memorial Cup with Nathan MacKinnon. When they were in Halifax together, coached Canadian college, he coached AAA. What do you know about this guy? And because Mark Bergevin, I think the way Mark Bergevin talked yesterday, I think this guy was ticketed to be Claude Julien's replacement, regardless, whenever it was going to be, he was going to be Claude Julien's replacement.
Yeah, it sounds like he was the heir apparent, right, Dan? It sounded like there was no, and Bergevin himself spoke to that. He said there was no one else that he was looking at. You know, some people were saying, what about Joel Bouchard, who's been coaching down Laval in the AHL? But I think that Bouchard is a really good developmental coach, and he's the kind of guy who can move guys along, and you'll get some guys who it'll have to be some perfect storm that's going to put a guy like Joel Bouchard into the National Hockey League. But they really felt, Bergevin really felt, that Dominique Ducharme is the guy. And I think that he just likes the presence that he has. He likes the fact that he's a young enough guy who's almost in the same generation as the players who he's going to be coaching. Not exactly, but close. I mean, what? He's only 2 years older than Shea Weber, right? So here's
dude, you better hope Shea doesn't hear this podcast.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, the good thing is about the pandemic is I don't have to be in the dressing room where he can use me as a railway spike, right? So that's good too. So, but, you know, he's a guy who I think just has, they think that the work that he's put in, they want to give, it's his job certainly to lose, right? And he has the interim title through the end of the season. But I think that if he does well, if he does something with his hockey team, I mean, you're just going to erase that interim off of his title. I think he's the guy that Mark Bergevin sees moving forward. And it's interesting now that I think that, you know, the hiring of Dominique Ducharme, pretty much Mark Bergevin has hitched his wagon to this guy. Mark Bergevin has been with the Montreal Canadiens for a good length of time here, and he's hired and fired a few coaches. And I think at some point, given the fact that the team has spent to the cap and that they have what they have, and they're very excited about the possibilities, if this team flames out, the attention very squarely turns to Mark Bergevin. I'm not saying that he's on thin ice at this point, but at some point, Jeff Molson will say, we need some accountability. And if you can freely move a coach around, you can freely move a general manager as well.
Dave Stubbs finally got to the point I was trying to make earlier about accountability. Yeah, I do. I think Mark Bergevin has some skin in this game. He's responsible for what's happened.
Yeah, absolutely he is. I mean, and look, he went out and got these guys. And on the 3rd of January, when he did his training camp opening press conference, he said, we know the expectations are high. Claude Julien that day said, we know that we are supposed to be in the playoffs. There's absolutely no hesitation. We haven't just sort of put together a decent team here. And I think the expectation in Montreal is not just that this team makes the playoffs, but it's when they get in the playoffs, they make some noise and they have a run. Are they in a position right now to make a run? They're kind of tiptoeing on eggshells right now. I think there's a little bit of fragility on this lineup, and maybe Dominique Ducharme will be able to turn it around. They've got a couple against Winnipeg. Hopefully they could play another 15 games against Vancouver and have some fun with them. But you look at how they got slapped around by Ottawa, and Bergevin himself even got a little testy about that, saying, don't talk to me about the fact that, you know, it was the last place team in our division that beat us. He said, this is a young team. They're well coached. And we both know, we all know here that, I mean, any team can beat any team on any given night, right? So we'll see. We'll see what the Canadians do back-to-back here with a couple games against the Jets. And we'll see beyond then. But you're right. There's the accountability issue, certainly. I think that that Mark Bergevin is being looked at. And he's been looked at for quite a while. You can only rebuild in Montreal. Montreal Canadiens fans' patience will only run so deep. And I think that Jeff Molson may kind of feel a bit the same way. While he supports fully Bergevin on the record, I think that he also knows that he's got a product correct here. And given the extraordinary situation of the pandemic and not having that building full and not having the revenue streams that you want, this hockey team has to do well. They have to get into the playoffs and they have to make a run. And if they don't, then I think all bets are off.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see, no doubt. By the way, we would be, before we let you go, we'd be remiss not to talk to you about some of the historical stuff that you've done on NHL.com. You recently had a conversation with Ken Dryden. I wonder if you could tell the listeners about that one.
Yeah, actually, the Canadians and the Maple Leafs, I think they had a couple of games. It was back on the 20th, I guess, the Canadians were going into Toronto. And I spoke with Ken just about the rivalry. I thought that this historic rivalry, these guys, they were going to be playing their 750th game when they played last Saturday. This 751st game against each other made them the two franchises which have played each other most in the NHL. The Canadians and the Bruins had played each other 750 times. But Dryden's been on both sides, right? He played for a decade with the Canadians in the 70s, and then for 6 years he was president of the Maple Leafs. And so he's sort of seen this rivalry from both sides, and he spoke about the culture and the fact it's linguistic. And you didn't sort of get the mundane answer that you would have thought maybe from some other people. Ken Dryden is a lawyer, he's an author, he's an educator. You ask Kenny the time of day, he tells you how to make a watch, right? And that's exactly what he did. So he was really, really good talking about the rivalry and the culture, and again, the languages and how society, the two cities have been feuding back and forth, and the demographics of the cities and their economic pulse in Canada. So Ken, as you would expect, was really, really good about that. And yeah, he was a lot of fun. He's always great. And I always make sure that my MP3 recorder is fully charged when I get Ken on the phone.
And it's such a rarity to talk to him. I mean, he's kind of kept a low profile, at least hockey-wise. I mean, he never keeps a low profile because he's involved in so many things. But his opinions on hockey until very recently were circumspect at best. I mean, he came out last week with this big article about making the Nets bigger because the goalies are so big. And I guess he's forfeiting his goalie union card at this point.
Yeah, that's right. I know. And that's Ken, right? I mean, he's sort of at his most verbose when he has a project that he's doing. So it's always great to catch up with him though.
Well, Dave, it's great to catch up with you. Great perspective on the Montreal Canadiens, as we expected you to have. I mean, you're up there. And I love what you said before we started recording. It's very interesting. He said the Stanley Cup to a generation of the fans up here in Montreal is like a rumor right now. So it's been since 93.
We got to go to the Hall of Fame in Toronto to see it, right?
Well, maybe Dominique Ducharme's the answer. You know, maybe he is the one that changes everything. We'll see.
First time's a Ducharme. I wasn't even going to say
that. There you go. I was going to say it, but I left it for you. Glad you picked it up. Thanks for joining us. All right.
Hey, Dan, Sean, thanks so much for having me.
Sean, I'm really glad we got Dave on to talk Canadians, give that perspective of somebody who's up in Montreal. I love how he said he opened the blinds this morning and the sun was shining. So it did come up in Montreal. So good stuff there from Dave Stubbs.
He has a way with words. A, he should be Irish. And B, I aspire to have the ability to turn a phrase like Dave Stubbs.
Yeah, he's good. The man's had some experience. I mean, you know, didn't he cover the first NHL game? You know,
he might have. He said he wasn't going to give us his New Zealand notes,
right,
exactly. Game notes. So, but you know what? He has lived through what, the last 13 coaching changes since the last cup.
Yeah,
that market is unique, and in covering it, you know, you have to have a special skill set to cover that market, and Dave has done it forever with the Montreal Papers before he joined us, and you know, is literally the repository of everything Canadians.
He's excellent, so it was good to get him on. Our next guest will be Kwame Mason from the Soul on Ice podcast, but before we get there, another big market, let's turn our focus to the New York Rangers, because they remain a story even though they're not winning a lot of games. Artemi Panarin is the big story this week, taking a leave of absence from the team. Allegations thrown at him from Russia. Andrei Nazarov, a former coach of his in the KHL, saying that 11 years ago in Riga, Latvia, he beat up an 18-year-old woman. There's no corroboration for the story, but Panarin right now is on a leave of absence from the Rangers as he's trying to deal with all that. We're not going to speculate on what's going on with that, Sean. We focus on the ice here, and I watched the Rangers last night against the Flyers, And without Panarin, it was quite obvious the issues that this team could have. Honestly, I mean, they didn't have Kako either. Obviously, Filip Hedl's been out. Jacob Trouba's been out. So it's been a litany of stuff for them. But Panarin's the guy. When he gets the puck, when he's on the ice and he gets the puck, he controls everything. Last night, they get the hat trick from Chris Kreider, all within about a foot of the net. But beyond that, it didn't look like they had much control in that game. And I think it was very evident how much they missed Panarin. And we don't know how long he could be back. He could be out.
No, and look, they're missing a ton of guys. But, you know, the one thing that struck me was when Chris scored his final goal and you look at his stat line, he's the leader for the Cy Young this year.
Yeah.
8 goals, 1 assist.
Yeah. Like,
he's not making too many passes, but that's his role, right?
He goes to the net.
You hope you tip something goes off your backside, you block the goalie's line of vision, whatever it might be. But, I mean, look, I feel really bad for David Quinn. Like, he's earning whatever he's getting this year because he's had to put together some lineups that aren't really fair to go into battle with in the NHL. And you know, we talked about all the injured guys and Condrey Miller's out now, you know, and but like even some of the guys that are playing, like you look at them on the ice, like Buchnevich and you're like, who are these guys? Like, they're not playing like they played last year. And I don't know if it's because they don't have the supporting cast around them or what it is. I don't know if a little bit like Montreal, they're a little bit of a victim of their own generated expectations from last year. Everybody was so excited about this team. And I wasn't sure what they had, especially because they got rid of Henrik Lundqvist and they had no experienced goalie. They have no goalie that's lived through this.
No.
And these things, they build, right? When you don't have a team that's been through this and doesn't understand that the sun is going to rise, the nuclear winter is going to be over. I'm just going to steal Dave Stubbs' lines instead of coming up with my own. Henrik Lundqvist understood that because he learned it. These goalies, they haven't learned it. And, you know, Shesterkin's been good. He was good in that game. They lost. But now it's building on itself. Like, how do you get out? Does he turn to his other goalie and say, hey, can you help me here? And the other goalie says, gee, I don't know. I have like 20 games more experience than you do.
Well, you know what? You're right. You're 100% right. But I don't even look at it that way. Like, I look at it in everything that this team has dealt with. You know, it's started with the Tony DeAngelo stuff, right? Look back at the Tony DeAngelo stuff. So that's unique. Like, that doesn't happen every day in a National Hockey League team. Maybe you have certainly you have disagreements, but to the point where the guy gets waived and he's not welcome back, that doesn't happen. So they've dealt with that. And now in the middle of all of it, you got COVID. You're dealing with that too, right? Kako is on the COVID list right now. Keandre Miller was put on the COVID list. And now you got the Panarin thing, which is completely unique. We haven't seen anything like that, right? Chris Kreider the other day said that he spoke with Alexi Lafreniere and he said, in 2 months, you've seen as much as I've seen or more than my almost 10 years in the National Hockey League. So it's different. But on the ice, Mika Zibanejad's got 2 goals. One of them's an empty net goal. He gets a shorthanded breakaway last night against the Flyers with about 3 minutes and 45 seconds left in the third period. A year ago, it's a 4-3 game against the Washington Capitals, and Mika Zibanejad's in the middle of getting his next goal was 4, and his next one was 5. Last night, he puts it right in the blocker of Brian Elliott. He can't score. If Mika Zibanejad, who had 41 goals in 57 games for you last year, can't score on a breakaway when it's 4-3 late in the third period, it's a problem. You've got to be able to put that puck in the net. I don't want to get on him, but Lafreniere's got 2 goals, you know, that's his only points. He's got no assists. There's a lot going on there. There's some things to build off of. Adam Fox has been terrific, by the way, just terrific. But now without Panarin, it was so obvious to me how much they missed that guy.
Yeah. Look, and you got to give everybody a little bit of a pass here, right? This is professional sports and we want players to do well and we want our teams to do well. But you mentioned it a little bit and Emily Benjamin on our staff actually did a really interesting story yesterday. This rookie class, and you can even throw some second year guys in it. Their experience in the NHL in a way that nobody ever has.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit about what I talked about with the goalies. Like, there's nobody to help them. There's no meetings in person. There's no hanging around in the locker room after practice playing ping pong and, you know, saying, hey, you know, I noticed this in the game last night, and, or, hey, I don't know where to go get a suit for the road trip. Like, you can't have those conversations. Like, you just, they don't happen. Everything happens online. You know, some guys are living together, some rookies are living together. But like Lafreniere, he's just on his own.
Yeah.
Like, go figure it out, man.
It's hard.
Like, you're 18 years old. Go figure it out, because we can't help you. Like, you watch practice now, you watch morning skates, or you see Twitter reports, and it's always like, oh, Coach A is talking to so-and-so for 5 minutes. And in the past, that would mean somebody's in trouble. Now coaches have figured out, I can't have one-on-one meetings with players anymore in the locker room, because that's part of the COVID protocol. But the ice is a free-for-all. So they have their meetings right on the ice, right?
Yeah.
And that's why you see guys staying out later. And that's where all the communicating is being done. But I don't think anybody understands the culture of a team and how it's built in these really everyday moments, like I said, of hanging out and playing ping pong, of being on the bus, going to a rink and sitting right next to somebody, or, you know, dinner, or, you know, you're on a 5-game losing streak and hey, let's get all the boys together and we're going to go out and we're going to have a couple of beers and we're going to laugh and, you know, tomorrow's going to be better. None of that happens. You go home and you sit and
yeah.
You play video games, or you think about what happened, or you watch Netflix, but you never escape. There's no way to just say, let's just go and have fun and talk about something else. It's not happening right now. So I think the young players who are the mentally most strong are the ones that are going to come out of this the best.
Well, you're 100% right. It's going to be interesting. So we had Chris Wagner on last week, and he said, I'm going to go play Call of Duty in a little while here with Kevin Hayes virtually, because got nothing else to do. You know, I mean, that's kind of the way it is right now. Anyway, maybe Panarin will be back eventually. Maybe Filippito will start getting, I think he's practicing today. Maybe he'll get on the ice soon. Kako will be back. Maybe things will turn for the Rangers here in a little bit. We'll see. They certainly can use a stroke of some good luck.
Before we get to our next guest, Kwame, you just mentioned Chris Wagner. We would be remiss if we did not at least spend 1 minute talking about Lake Tahoe and how beautiful it was.
It was unreal.
There were problems. Look, this Saturday game, you know, had to get moved to midnight. It was fun watching hockey at midnight.
It was, actually. Yeah,
you know, everybody taking else in a nap beforehand, was sound asleep. And, you know, I looked out and there were no lights on. And, you know, it was like my own little secret society with everybody online that stayed up to watch it. And there were issues with the sun and whatever else. But the visuals in the first period of the game on Saturday and throughout the game on Sunday, that sunset on Sunday during the Bruins Flyers game was ridiculous. And then David Pastrnak just stole the show after that. So I thought it was a really good weekend. And a lot of people, if you look at the ratings, a lot of people agreed with me. It was the most watched game ever on NBCSN.
Yeah. The ratings for that Bruins Flyers game were terrific. The shot again, we'll get to Kwame Mason here in a second. The shot of Charlie McAvoy taking his shot to score and the image in the background of the sun setting over the lake and the mountains. It was incredible. It's like the greatest hockey shot ever, pretty much the greatest hockey photo ever, really. People will argue Bobby Orr, but that one was pretty darn special too. So definitely the images were great. The games I thought came off well. When they came back for the midnight start, 9 p.m. local time, the ice was terrific. Nobody wanted to see the pause, but they did the right thing. Safety of the players had to be paramount there, but the ice was great. The game flowed. It was fast. It was a good hockey game. And then I just love David Pastrnak. Scored his first goal in sunlight, his second goal in dusk, and his third goal in darkness. I thought that was awesome. And then I want to stand here and apologize to David Pastrnak that we ruined him, his dance party to Barbie Girl.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you missed your literary roots. His second goal was scored in the Gloaming.
Oh, okay.
Ted Williams.
All right. Sorry.
Right. But forget the dance party. How about the outfits?
The outfits were great. Yeah.
Fantastic. The 90s, the callback to the 90s, right? Like, not to date myself, but that was my generation right there. I might have owned a few pieces of those clothing. I don't really want to own up to it, but I might have had the fluorescent San Antonio Spurs starter jacket. I have no idea why I had a San Antonio Spurs.
I had a Charlotte Hornets starter jacket.
It might have been a hand-me-down.
No idea why.
but was it sharp?
Yeah, it was.
No, and some parachute pants.
They were great. Pasternak with the glasses too was awesome. Yaroslav Halak coming on the ice with the mullet was terrific. Love the personality. We need more David Pasternak in the National Hockey League. We can have a whole podcast on that. But all right, let's get to Kwame Mason here from the Soul on Ice podcast. It's obviously the tail end now of Black History Month. The NHL's done a lot. Kwame's done a ton on his podcast, and we just thought it would be great to talk to Kwame just about that and what it means for this month in the NHL and everything he's been able to do. So Kwame, thanks so much for jumping on with us. How you doing, man?
I'm good, boys. You know, it's like you said, it's like we're at the tail end of Black History Month, and you know, as appreciative as I am of all the coverage and all the work that's being done, it's like it's a lot, man. You're just getting pulled left, right, and center, especially in this space. But I wouldn't trade it for the world. You know, I always say, like, February is my month, and, you know, you go hard, and then, you know, for the rest of it, it's just kind of getting prepared. And I just hope we can get into a place where, you know, you're not just going so hard body karate in February, and then the rest of the months are just whatever. You know, I just want to kind of make it more consistent. But, you know, for where we are right now, man, we good.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to spread it out more throughout the year and have the celebration numerous times, I think. And then we'll definitely be getting further along that path. Dan mentioned you've done so much. I'm wondering if there's a personal highlight that you've had in this month and in the podcast and just in spreading the message in general that you're trying to spread. Is there anything that's happened this month that when you look back, you're like, wow, that was really cool?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I think for the most part, just having the girls, like the, you know, Blake Bolden, Soraya Tinker, Sarah Nurse, Angela James, you know, to kind of take over the podcast. That was kind of like the highlight for me, in the sense that, you know, giving those ladies that platform, because, you know, when it comes to, you know, when you think about, you know, Black males and their history in the game of hockey, and trying to get young Black boys into the game, like, that's nothing compared to, like, these young Black girls. Like, it's not even night and day. It's, like, two different universes. If we thought it was hard getting young Black boys to play hockey, like, can't imagine what it must be like for young Black girls in their space. So just to give them that opportunity to let their voices be heard and just to, you know, speak on, you know, whatever they wanted to talk about, that was really cool to sit back and see.
You know, and I was listening to that just before we had you on. I was listening back to it, and it was great. It was just the four of them, plus with Angela joining in, having a great conversation about what they're up to and what they're doing and all that. Do you think, Kwame, that they fully grasp the role models that they are? Do you think that they kind of get that, or is it they just love it and they're doing it, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, women are more mature than men, so
they are.
You know, I think from the jump start they know, and they've been sitting back for so many years just watching what's been going on, and they've been, you know, itching and waiting to be in this position. And now that they're in this position where they can have some influence, I think they're taking it full advantage of it. Their room for understanding and growth is going to be very small, because they're just smart women, and, you know, they're going to do a great job at it regardless. So I think they grasp it. I think they know it more than, you know, the guys do, to be honest with you. I think they understand how much of a role model they are because of the simple fact that they weren't able to see anybody that really looked like them for, like, you know, for most of their careers. And just the simple fact that, you know, they didn't really even know about Angela James growing up as girls was one of those things for them. It's just like, you know, we got to make sure that doesn't happen again.
You know, speaking of Angela James and a lot of the stuff that I consumed this month, to me, she was one of the real standout stars. A, she's so articulate, but B, it almost seems, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost seems like she's in a place now where she doesn't care anymore about what other people think. and she's ready to get her message out. Like the video that she did for NHL.com, the appearance that she made on your podcast, it was almost like an unplugged version, right? Of that's you know, how Bill Douglas explained it to me. It was almost like an unplugged version of Angela James, where she just kind of laid things bare and said, this is the way it is. I don't care anymore what other people think.
I think it's really interesting. I think either she's kind of grown into that, or she's kind of always had, like, she's always been a spunky girl, just from, if you know where she grew up, like, that's just the nature of the beast out there. It's just like, you know, accept me or don't accept me, but just watch your mouth, and, you know, I might smack it. Like, that's where she grew up. You know what I mean? That's her mindset. So, you know, and I think she was smart enough to understand from a very early age, or maybe because of her age, that, you know, right now for the women's game, nobody's really messing with us. So I don't have to placate just to pretend, because you ain't giving me anything anyway. So I'm just going to be straight up honest with you. So now that, you know, people are putting a microphone in her face and, you know, asking her opinion, she's looking at her past and looking at where she's at right now and looking at her future. She's like, yeah, I don't care. I'm going to tell you straight up and down what's what. And, you know, and I think that's got to be the best approach, especially in this hockey world. I think, you know, right now where we're at, we're all trying to be, you know, we all want to see the game grow and we all want to have that voice. But I still think that there's that little bit of, I still got to placate and make sure that I don't offend nobody, instead of just laying it all on the line. And, you know, she's got good intentions. So when she speaks so candidly like that, you know, she's not coming from a very wicked and evil place. She's coming from a place of love and wanting to see the game grow. So, yeah, I love hearing her talk and being as candid as she is.
Hey, you know, Kawhi, when you just listening to you talk there, I mean, you've laid it on the line. You know, you put yourself out there, and, you know, it's been a while now. Like, how have you seen your goal to tell stories, to, you know, all of the things that you're trying to do, break barriers, whatever it may be, materialized through the hockey world, through the NHL over the course of the past few years? I mean, are you where you want to be with it, you think?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's really interesting, because sometimes I'll sit back and I'll like visualize the conversation as like I'm just looking over and I'm just seeing everybody talking, you know, all the things that are happening. And all I can think back is like, man, I remember 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, and nobody was even talking about this. This wasn't even on anybody's real radar. I mean, like, people will say that, you know, there's little programs here and little, but where we're at right now, it just seems like it's coming from all different directions. And I think it's good, because, you know, we're figuring it out, and there's a lot of people that have been put in positions where their voices are being heard and decisions are being made. And I think that's always been my hope for it. You know, when I was working on my film Soul on Ice, Past, Present, and Future, my whole to bring awareness to Black athletes in the game of hockey, the contribution to history, and to get to a place where we could start recognizing that, you know, to grow this game, if we want to grow this game, we're going to have to promote it to different markets, different people, different backgrounds. And, you know, as a Black male, I can only control what I see. And so, you know, seeing where we are right now, it's good. It's fun, man. It's really fun. I get a good snicker because I think to myself that, you know, 2015, you know, if you look back, or when the history books look back at it, they'll say that is the starting point of everything going in the direction that it should be going.
Along with that, it seems to me that there's more players and more high profile players coming into the league that help with that message. You know, you have guys like Darnell Nurse who's starting to really come into his own and become a real star player in Edmonton. And then you have a whole wave of younger players coming in, with Quinn Byfield being drafted early, and the Joseph brothers and other players like that. Obviously that helps in the message, but it's also a reflection of what everybody's been trying to accomplish, to have more players involved, more players of color involved in the league.
Yeah. And that's where it's going to get a little tricky there, because, you know, and we talked about this on our last episode with, some of the coaches from Tampa Bay, you know, the pressure that's on these young guys, because, you know, at the end of the day, these guys just want to play hockey, and the social justice issue or the growth of the game is something that's literally, you know, playing passenger. And so, you know, sometimes I'm wondering myself, are we putting too much pressure on these guys? Are these guys comfortable enough to be talking about it? I mean, is their presence alone speaking enough? Is it, you know, because again, like, you know, representation matters, and sometimes just the visualization of these players can be enough without them even having to say a word, because these kids just got to be able to see themselves in that position. So, you know, seeing themselves in that position could be good enough, because maybe they might open their mouth and someone would be like, "Whoa, what are they saying?" And they don't even know what they're talking about. So I think we're at a point right now where we, you know, as much as we love to see these young Black kids getting in the National Hockey League, getting a chance to play big time minutes and being in high profile positions, we have to also go to them and say, "Hey, what are you comfortable with? What do you know? What do you want to know?" You know, because some guys may not even want to have that pressure on the back. Maybe they just want to play the game, and either which way is fine by me. And I mean, if they just want to play the game, then, you know, they just have to know that their presence alone is going to be, you know, enough for these kids to be inspired just as much as if they were to grab a microphone and say something. But at the end of the day, they just got to be comfortable in whatever space they're in.
And this will be the last one for me. Along those lines, it kind of bleeds into what I wanted to ask you, my last question, your role here and also working with the NHL, with Kim Davis, with Jeff Scott. I mean, you talk about how you've got to make the players do things that they're comfortable, you know, allow the players to do things they're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. So what does then that entail for yourself, for Kim, for Jeff, as you want to continue to push the promotion, you want to continue, you know, to highlight these issues that are so very important?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. That's a really good question and a good piece of conversation. Cause for me, it's always been about trying to create content. And I think initially, you know, you're starting to make these pieces about, okay, here's this player of color and where he came from and what issues he's had. And, you know, and sometimes those guys don't even want to talk about that, man. Honestly, sometimes those guys are just like, "Yo, I'm over that." And I think if we're going to speed track or work in a very progressive lane to get the ultimate goal of being in an inclusive environment to happen, we have to say to ourselves, well, what are we trying? What kind of messages are we trying to put out there? And I remember a couple of months ago, I was like so frustrated. Like I was online and, you know, there were so many things that are being talked about, and it got to me. And I was sitting back to myself and I said, you know, what am I even doing this for? Like, the hate that's going on, the type of talking, I'm like, half of these people that are talking so vile about this, where were you 5 years ago? Where were you 3 years ago? Where were you 2 years ago? All of a sudden now you have these comments and they're so negative, and the league this and the league needs to do that. And so it made me sit back and say, you know, what am I doing? And I got to this philosophy of like, you know, what I want to do and what I can control is normalizing Black faces and voices in the game of hockey. That's what I want to do with the podcast. The podcast, you know, So On Ice, Past, Present, Future, you know, you got three, or So On Ice, the podcast, has got three Black people talking, interviewing. Majority of our guests are Black, but it's not a Black podcast. It's just a hockey podcast hosted by Black people. And it's just, I want us to be normal. I want it to be normal to see Black faces and voices in the game of hockey. And that's what I want to be able to control. So when it comes to these players, I want to be able to do stories on PK Subban, on the Joseph brothers, on any player of color that's just a story.
Yeah.
If they're huge dog lovers, well, I want to do a story on you about being a dog lover. And so it doesn't have to be a piece of a storyline of, oh, well, when they were five, somebody called them the N-word or something. Like, let's, you know, we always want to recognize that there's been some sort of pain and we don't want to forget, but we also want to make sure that the conversation is normal. It's normal to see Kwame on NHL Network. It's normal to hear Elijah Roberts doing an interview with Wayne Gretzky or somebody. It just should just be a normal thing. So, yeah, it's long-winded, man, but I've been thinking about that for a very long time. And, you know, that's kind of the mindset that I've kind of come up with. And, you know, I want it to be a statement in whatever I do, is like the normalization of minority faces and voices in the game of hockey, because that's how we're going to get it to grow. And that's how we're going to attract more audience members from outside of the typical hockey community.
Last one for me, and we'll let you go. And your passion is contagious. So you make me want to go out and do like 90 different projects now. How much has social media, and there's so many negative things about it, but the ability to communicate on so many different platforms, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, podcasts, the fact that the means have come to the people now, just like me and Dan with this podcast, how much has that accelerated the movement and the fact that the message can now be controlled by the people who are trying to get the message out? You don't have to rely on me and Dan anymore or another podcast. People can just go out and create their own message and let it be consumed.
So with everything that's good and bad, with like Uncle Ben said, with great power comes with great responsibility. And I think people, some of them are being responsible with it. Some are honestly not. And so, you know, with social media, the great thing about it is, you know, you can accelerate that conversation and you can approach it from so many different angles. But my fear is sometimes you'll get a voice that doesn't come from love for the game. It just comes from pointing fingers and saying, oh, you're not doing. And then you got other people going, yeah, they're not doing. And the tricky part about where we are right now, we want to grow the game. And if our message is in any way slightly against it, you're going to turn off a lot of people. So I always say this, like I've heard people go, well, hockey isn't for everyone. You guys say hockey is for everyone. And I'm just like, listen, first of all, if you're talking that and you don't like the game of hockey, that's fine. But if you're in the space of trying to grow the game and you start to send out a message that hockey isn't for everyone, if I'm a young Black family and I got a kid who's about 3 years old and I'm thinking about what sport I want him to be in, and you tell me hockey isn't for everyone, okay, fine. Well, I'm going to go to what I already know. Give me a chance to even give young families the opportunity to think about the game. So you have to watch the messages that are going out. Now, the hate is going to hate. So if they want to be on, they want to hate on their platforms, that's fine. I'm not even talking about them. But it's the ones who are claiming to be hockey fans, who are claiming to want to see the game grow. Those are the people I'm like, yo, just watch what you're saying and how you're saying it, because it could deter somebody from even giving the game a chance. We're already behind the eight ball. We don't need more negative. Like, we got to hold the league and the whole hockey ecosystem accountable for their actions, but we have to do it in a smart way, that we are doing it in a positive way, that we are able to go in the right direction to open up the game and give people the opportunity to say to themselves, yeah, I don't like the game, or I do like the game. I don't want people's decision to be on, you know, TikTok and all the, you know, I don't want it to be from there. I want it to be, you went to a live game and you said, yeah, I don't really like this. But, you know, like anybody else knows, 9 times out of 10, you go to a live game, you're already in.
Yeah. Well said. This is why I'm glad we had Kwame on the podcast, Sean, because he says it better than either one of us. There's no question about it.
It's not even a contest.
Not even.
I'm afraid Bob's going to hire Kwame in my place.
I've been, I just had a lot of time on my hands, and you know what I mean? So I've been thinking about this a lot.
There you go. Hey, man, thanks so much for hopping on. Keep doing what you're doing. It's great stuff. All right. Everybody, thanks, check out the podcast too, the Soul on Ice podcast.
Get some rest.
Thanks, brother.
Sean, we're lucky enough to see Kwame as he's doing this, because we're doing this on Zoom. We could see each other. And if he wasn't saying a word, you could still see the passion that he has for the whole thing. And then everybody listening, hopefully the passion that he has for what he does comes through in what he was saying, because it's he's so passionate. He does so much. And it was great to hear from him.
Yeah, and it's an important message. Yeah, no, I thought he might come through the screen at some point and smash our heads together to make us understand it better. But I mean, that's what fuels stuff like that. It's passion. It's what makes great athletes. It's what makes great announcers. It's what makes great writers, much like yourself. It's the passion for what you're doing, and that has to shine through. People see through anything else.
Yeah, no kidding. They do. So great stuff there from Kwame. Let's before we wrap up, we have to look ahead. And we got McDavid Matthews coming up, 3 in a row, Edmonton and Toronto, Saturday, Monday, and Wednesday, all in Edmonton. They've played 4 times already this season. Matthews has been involved in 3 of those games. McDavid's been involved in 4. McDavid scored the OT winner the last time they played. He's got 7 points against Toronto this season. Matthews has 3 goals against Edmonton. I mean, these two guys have to be the front runners here for the Hart Trophy, and here they are going to go head-to-head 3 times.
Yeah, I mean, look, you put a couple other people in that conversation. I think
sure you do. Put
Patrick
absolutely
Kane
yeah.
in that conversation, and maybe David Pastrnak for the Bruins. But they're clearly the front runners as the best players, and you know, Nathan MacKinnon's in there as well. But they're the front runners, and the thing that I love that's kind of played out since the start of the year is every time one of them does something, the other one's like, "I'll show you." So the other night, you know, Austin Matthews scores 2 goals, has 2 assists, and does that while Edmonton's waiting to play. And then Connor McDavid figures in the first 5 goals, and all of a sudden people are ready to call up Darryl Sittler. They were not even halfway through the game. Didn't score another point, but it was still like, I see what you did, and I did it one better. And now, you know, it's up to Austin Matthews again. You hope he can play. I guess it came out last night. He got hurt a little bit. He's had a problem with his wrist all year. The Leafs have said that he's playing through it. You know, you hope when they play on Saturday, first to 3 in a row in Edmonton, that he's able to show up. And, you know, if it is indeed a chronic wrist injury, the fact that he's done what he's done at less than 100% is
it's amazing.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. It's really affecting his shot, isn't it? You know, it's crazy. The guy's been incredible. I know there's other guys that you throw into this, and Leon Draisaitl's a terrific player, Marner, Tavares. I mean, there's so much that goes into this Edmonton Toronto. It's the thing that we pointed at this, you know, when they announced this format, the division-based format, that's what we pointed at. Oh my God, we're going to see Matthews and McDavid, you know, how many times? And that's really what I look for. When I watch these games, I look for these two players. And like I said, I know Draisaitl's terrific. He's a Hart Trophy winner, Art Ross winner, but nobody brings me out of my chair the way these two do. And then they go head to head. And if they can go back and forth, it'll make for some terrific hockey. And again, they play 3 times, Saturday, Monday, and Wednesday, all in Edmonton. Then fast forward to the end of March and they play another 2 more times. So going to see a lot of high flying speed goals. I mean, they're terrific.
I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Uh-oh.
You're the GM. Of a new team.
Oh boy.
And both those players right now, as they stand right now, are somehow made available in an expansion draft. Which one do you build your team around?
Oh boy. Oh my gosh.
It's only going to define your tenure, so don't worry about it.
Well, you can't really be wrong, right? Yeah. Like, I gotta be wrong. I would have to say Connor McDavid, because of the speed. Nobody plays the way he does. Nobody plays the way he does. Nobody has ever, I think, played the way he does. When he needs to, when he feels the need to, he could take the puck and take over a game, go end to end, make moves, do insane things that nobody else can do. That's not to take anything away from Austin Matthews. Terrific player. But McDavid to me is the guy in the league now where the rest of the other 17 skaters can be having terrible nights, and he could still be unbelievable and carry his team to have a chance to win.
No, I respect that. I would go the other way, and I think I'm in the minority. We're doing an alumni roundtable on Friday to kind of celebrate that game, and we asked a lot of legends in the game who they would pick, and it was as tough a decision for them as it was for you, and I'll let the results – you'll have to go to NHL.com this weekend to find out. But when I think about Matthews, one, you know – he's scoring almost a goal a game 20 games into the season. Like, and that's what the game's about at the end. Is it's not about highlights. It's not about speed. It's not about any of those things. It's about putting the puck in the net. And I don't know that there's anybody that does it better than Austin Matthews. And I see him developing more like a Steve Yzerman, right, as he gets older and into his prime, or Sidney Crosby, where he has that elite offensive talent. But, you know, you listen to Sheldon Keefe and he's already talking about the strides he's made defensively and
terrific.
What he's the example he's setting for his team. And I'm not saying that Connor McDavid doesn't set those examples, but nobody's going to argue that he's as good in the defensive zone. That is not where he chooses to show his excellence. So I just think under that scenario that I gave you, if you're building a team, I would take the 200-foot player every time.
I'll tell you what I would love to do. I would love to see somebody do it. Maybe we could do it. It's to highlight McDavid shift by shift, right? And see what he does in the defensive zone. Really focus on what he does in the defensive zone. And the reason I say that is because his speed is blows you away, and what he does with the puck on his stick blows you away. And I think maybe it could get a little lost what he does in the defensive zone. And I'd like to see it. I can't give a, you know, the Oilers to me are not a great defensive team, but neither are the Leafs. Matthews has been terrific defensively this season, making a lot of different, you know, subtle little plays, stick lifts, things along those lines, closing a guy out. I would like to see McDavid's defensive zone shifts highlighted and see what he does there.
Yeah. And he doesn't have the puck a lot in the defensive zone. He's not pinned in very often, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Anyway, that is something to look forward to. Three matchups between those teams, let's say teams, but certainly those two. You wanted to look forward to something else, though. You wanted to bring up one more thing, right, before we close this podcast.
Well, I wanted to look back.
Look back. I should say look back.
Yes. Today is a very special anniversary for most hockey fans. Not for Dan Rosen, because he always has to be different from the rest of us. But today's the anniversary of Slapshot, which to me is one of the five best movies ever made. I can watch it every day if I have to. Watch it probably two or three times a year. I finally sat down with my son. He's 15. He was 15 at the time he turned 16, and we watched it for the first time. It's a little racy to watch with your 15-year-old kid. But
he's old enough, though.
We got through it, and you know, it was awesome to introduce a new generation to that movie. And like, you just think about it. I remember I did a story a couple of years ago on the 40th anniversary and got to sit down with Steve Hansen a bit. And John McClane at the time said, you know, is the movie over the top? Did they exaggerate a lot of things? He's like, yeah, they did. But the half-truths are there, and that's what makes it funny. And for anybody that's been in the game for a long time, like, you just think about the characters in that movie, and they're hilarious. And the funniest story that Steve told me, you know, you think back and the guys are in the hotel room and they're playing with their cars, and you're like, oh, that's so out of control. Like that, yeah. That never happened. That's a true story. He told me when they lived in Johnstown, they lived in a three-story house. Two guys lived on the third story, two guys lived on the second story, and the landlady lived on the first floor. And every Sunday, they would take all of the furniture from the third floor, move it to the second floor, and set up the racetracks on the third floor. And they would bring a keg of beer, and the bars weren't open, so all the players from the team would come, and they would have car races on the third floor of their house. And that is a God's honest true story. And when he was telling me that story, that's when it hit me, like, yes, there's a little bit of exaggeration, but all this is true. And it's all very similar to things you did in college or your first time out. And God, I love the movie, and I'm going to go watch it tonight, I think.
There you go. All right. Well, I mean, this is another reason to come to this podcast to find out the true stories of Slapshot. It really is. I like the movie.
I got to figure out the soda machine next.
I like the movie. It's not my favorite movie. I like it. I'm probably like you. I could watch it every day, but it's not my absolute 100% favorite movie. But it's really good. And it's its anniversary, so we got to celebrate it. Good on you to bring it up.
Of course. There you go. I'm a cultural icon.
There you go. And so this was good. A lot of interesting stuff here. Dave Stubbs, Kwame Mason. We thank them for hopping on. And Sean, now I'm all jacked up for McDavid Matthews.
Me too. I hope you can capture the spirit of the thing.
There you go. We'll end it right there. Everyone, stay safe out there.